We invite you to open your Bibles to Judges chapter 7, and we'll be reading the first seven verses. It's a joy to see each of you here this evening, and we are here to glorify God. The visitors, certainly you are welcome, especially the youth. It's good to worship together, and I noticed a little bit more of a mixture here in the audience this evening, and that's a good thing. Judges chapter 7. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them, by the hill of Morah in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand has saved me. Now therefore, go to, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned on the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, every one that lappeth of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink, and the number of them that lappeth, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go every man unto his own place. Those who are able, we invite you to kneel at this time.
Say good evening to you again tonight, and again, I feel like I must say I stand here and the merits of Jesus Christ. We're going to look at the life of Gideon tonight. And as Brother George got started, I said to Brother Ken, I think we should just let Brother George continue. I think he would do a better job on this history than what I'm going to do. I wish I would have liked history when I was young. Now I'm starting to like it. I do like it, but I don't remember it very well. I don't think I would have remembered it very well when I was young, because I don't have a whole lot of memory of what I learned in school other than reading and writing and math. That's about it. And sometimes that comes as a struggle. We want to welcome the youth here tonight. We hope you can find a challenge in our lesson tonight. I believe it's a challenge for all of us. At least as I studied it, I was challenged with some of the thoughts that came to me as I looked over it and considered some lessons that we can learn from the life of Gideon and the life of the nation of Israel. Before we get into the life of Gideon, we're going to go back in history. We're going to probably spend half the message before we get to Gideon. I think it's quite interesting. Gideon was one of the judges that God used in the book of Judges. And before the book of Judges, we have the book of Joshua. And we know that Joshua was the one that led the children of Israel in to conquer the promised land. And we know that the children of Israel suffered some defeats in the promised land that because of sin and disobedience. But we also know that God delivered them and they were conquering and overtaking people there in the promised land. We get to the end of the book of Joshua. Joshua there in the last chapter, verses 14 and 15, the 24th chapter, says, now therefore fear the Lord. In the chapter, the last chapter there, Joshua was recounting some of the things that God had allowed the children of Israel to experience, some of the victories that he had given them. And as he gets to the end of the chapter, he says, "Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you, serve the Lord. Choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell." And then Joshua says, as we all know, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And following those two verses, the children of Israel answered Joshua. And they said, "God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods." I'm going to read a couple number of verses here. "For the Lord our God, he it is that brought us up out of our fathers. He it is that brought us up and our fathers out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, and which did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way wherein we went, and among all the people through whom we passed. And the Lord drave out from before us all the people, even the Amorites which dwelt in the land. Therefore, we will also serve the Lord, for he is our God." And Joshua said unto the people, "Ye cannot serve the Lord, for he is an holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins if ye forsake the Lord and serve strange gods. Then he will turn and do you hurt and consume you. After that, he hath done you good." And the people said unto Joshua, "Nay, but we will serve the Lord." And Joshua said unto the people, "Ye are witnesses against yourselves that ye have chosen you the Lord to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses." "Now therefore put away," said he, "the strange gods which are among you, and incline your heart unto the Lord God of Israel." And the people said unto Joshua, "The Lord our God will we serve, and his voice will we obey." So the people of Israel there made a promise. They made a vow to God and Joshua that they were going to serve God. They were going to be faithful to him. And you know what happened when Joshua died? They fell into idolatry. They fell away from their promise. They began to serve other gods. It says in Judges, the next book, Judges 17, verse 6, "And in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes." And an application that we have for the young people with this tonight is, and all of us, just because our father or our grandfather was a man of God, doesn't keep us there. It has to be our own. The relationship with God has to be our own relationship. These people made a promise, but the next generation didn't keep it. The thought came to me, we can envision being in a boat. Any one of us, all of us, in our own boat. And we have to paddle to stay in the correct current. We have to paddle. We have to work to serve God. If we just drift along, we're going to be caught into the currents of the world. We're going to be caught in drifting in the current with the world. I wanted us to take notice to how quickly it's lost. There's a brother here tonight. I think it was two generations or three that his ancestors went here and were considered excellent Sunday school teachers. And he wasn't raised in the church. But thank the Lord, he found salvation. Young men, for those here in the front, I challenge you. You are the future leaders. When I was in your bench, I never thought I'd be up here. But I challenge you, it's a challenge. It's a wonderful thing to serve the Lord. It's stretching. It's trying at times because of Satan, but it's well worth it. It's a joy. And I challenge you to serve God. So next we realize, we think of Gideon. Gideon led the people of Israel against, do you remember who the people were? It was the people, the Midianites. Well, to get a background on that, I want to go back even beyond Joshua, before Joshua. You remember the story of Balak and Balaam. Balak called for Balaam because the children of Israel camped right up against the Moabites. In the land of Moab, I think is how it's pronounced. And they were concerned because they saw what all was taking place. They saw what all the children of Israel were doing. And Balak was fearful of what the Israelites were going to do to him. So he got together with the Midianites. He called the elders of Midian together. And they sent for Balaam. Because Balaam, they wanted Balaam to come and they wanted him to put a curse on the children of Israel. And what Balak didn't know was God instructed the children of Israel not to give any problem to the Midianites. Back in Deuteronomy 2:9 it says, "And the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle. For I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession." So Balak was concerned about the children of Israel coming and causing him problems. The children of Israel were just camping. They were just camped next door, so to speak. But they brought Balaam in through, we remember all that happened there with the donkey and all that took place there. But eventually Balaam arrived and Balak took Balaam around on the mountaintops, so to speak, and looked down over, and he wanted Balaam to curse these people. And Balaam kept saying, I can't. I can't do what the Lord does not tell me to do, so to speak, in my own words. So eventually, Balaam leaves and goes home. And Balak, it says, Balak turned and went the other way. So it would appear as though everything was over. But we realize that that's not what happened. In Numbers 31, verse 16, we can read that Balaam didn't go home and just leave everything alone. I'm not sure what his intent was. But we read in Numbers 31, 16, "Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsels of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord." I think I might be getting ahead of myself. That was in chapter 22 that Balak and Balaam were... I'm just going to turn back so I get myself straightened down here. Chapters 22, 23, 24 is where Balaam was there with Balak. And he left there. In the very next chapter, we read in the first verse, chapter 25, "And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab." And it would appear and seem like Balaam maybe didn't curse the Israelites, but he advised the Moabites and the Midianites how to get these people to stumble. And you know, if the Moabites and the Midianites would have went into battle against the Israelites at that time, when Balaam was there, I believe the Israelites would have had their head on their shoulders and they would have defeated the Moabites and the Midianites. But through the subtlety of the stumbling blocks that Balaam advised them to put in front of them, the Israelites fell into idolatry, into sin. And that is an application for us and for the young people. Satan's not going to just hit you blindsided with a real obvious sin to start out. He's going to get you to stumble. He's going to get you weak. And some of those stumbling blocks in your life, in the time of your life, in the world that we live in, I believe one of those big stumbling blocks is the internet. I believe for you young men, if I was at your age, or when I was your age, if Ida would have had a cell phone that did not have a block on the internet, I would have fell. And if any of you have an internet on your phone that does not have a filter on it, I plead with you to get rid of it. Because if you're able to resist that and stay strong and not fall to that, you're different than most people. And if you fell to that, please get someone to help you and encourage you and walk you through victory. Another area of stumbling is what Hollywood makes so much money on, the movie industry. I've watched a lot of movies in my time when I was younger that I shouldn't have. And they draw you in. They pull you down. They cause you to have thoughts you shouldn't have. They cause you to waste time, and you're doing things, wasting time doing that when you could be doing much more profitable things. So these are stumbling blocks that Satan is going to put in your way and perhaps already has. And I challenge you to be prepared and to resist them. So we have the Midianites and the Moabites get the children of Israel to fall into the sin of idolatry and sexual sins that was related to that. Proverbs tells us that there's many strong men who have stumbled and fell by the temptations of a woman. Proverbs 7:26, "For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her." Satan knows you well. In fact, he knows you very well. And he's very good at what he does. He's very good at deceiving. He's very good at getting us to stumble and to fall. So then in chapter 25, after the Israelites fall and they commit this sin, God told Moses to vex the Midianites. He says, smite them. And I'm not sure. I looked that up. George, does that mean destroy them? I believe it does. I believe it means to just wipe them out. Destroy them. Get rid of them. Get rid of our sin and our stumbling blocks. So the children of Israel, and it's also interesting, the children of Israel go into battle. Moses had told them to vex them, get rid of them. One of the men that was killed in that battle was spelled out, and that was Balaam. That was quite interesting to me. The man that advised the Moabites how to get the Israelites to fall, God kept it in his word that that man was destroyed. He was accountable. So the children of Israel went into battle with these people. But they didn't listen. They weren't obedient. They killed the men. But they brought the children and they brought the women home. And it says Moses was very wroth in Numbers 31:14. Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands and captains over hundreds which came from battle. And Moses said unto them, "Have ye saved all the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Now therefore kill every male among the little ones, kill every woman that hath known man by lying with him. But all the women children that have not known a man by lying with him keep alive for yourselves." So this gives us a little bit of a background of the history of the Midianites and what they have, the pain that they have caused the children of Israel. But it's interesting to me that they weren't obedient. The Israelites weren't obedient in destroying the Midianites. And as we go into the life of Gideon, the Midianites, there they are. A challenge again. They did not destroy the sin, and it came back to haunt them. You and I can get away, it may appear, with sin. But it's going to come back to haunt us. And in this life, or maybe it might haunt the next generation, or the next generation. It was quite a few years from here where they fell into idolatry with the Moabites and the Midianites until Gideon had to deal with them. So another challenge. What do the decisions you make tonight and tomorrow and the next year don't affect just you? They affect those that follow you. So we jump ahead to Judges, where the life of Gideon is. Judges chapter 6. And we see that in the beginning of the chapter, it says that when Israel had sown, that the Midianites were come up, and the Amalekites and the children of East, even they came up against them. It says they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number. And they entered into the land to destroy it. These Midianites were impossible for the Israelites, humanly impossible for the Israelites to defeat. They come across the land on camels. The Midianites, or the Israelites, if I understand right, were on foot. How are you going to destroy an army that is outnumbering you by multitudes and they're on camels? Here they come just across the land, destroying your crops and your herds and just wiping you out. For 7 years, these Midianites destroyed and vexed the Israelites. And I believe God allowed that because of the past. They didn't destroy these people as they should have. And now they're suffering. So in Judges 6, verses 8 to 10, the people cry out unto the Lord. God sends them a prophet. He says, "And I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell. But ye have not obeyed my voice." It's interesting. I passed over it, but earlier in verse 4, it says that they encamped. I might be wrong. It might be in verse 3, but they encamped in caves and in dens on the mountainside, in my own words. They did that because of these Midianites coming across in just such fierce, there was nothing they could do. They ended up camping up in the mountains and digging caves, and that's where they hid out because it was horrible. Can you imagine being Gideon and God calling you to deliver you and your people from this enemy? Gideon was threshing grain, threshing wheat in a wine press, it says. And from what I can gather, a wine press was possibly a pit that he was threshing grain and threshing wheat in to have some concealment from the enemy, kind of hiding and trying to get this grain thrashed. And the angel of the Lord comes to Gideon, and he speaks to Gideon, telling him that he's a man of valor. And Gideon had a conversation there back and forth with the angel. He wanted a confirmation that indeed this was the angel. And he said, "I'll be back." He went and got a sacrifice. He brought it. He laid it on the rock. And the Lord confirmed that this was the angel by consuming the sacrifice, the meat that was on the rock. He brought fire out of the rock and consumed the meat that he laid there. And the Lord said unto him, "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" The first thing that God says to ask Gideon to do was to go and destroy the altar of Baal in his own community. Immediately, go destroy the altar of Baal. And the altar of Baal was on a raised area. It was not down in a corner somewhere where nobody saw what was taking place. But it was high up in an elevated place that it was very obvious and very noticeable. So Gideon, in his fear somewhat, chose 10 men and they destroyed this altar at night so it wouldn't be as noticeable. Right away in the morning there was a big stir as who tore down this altar, and eventually came out and they realized who did it. They realized it was Gideon. They went to Gideon's father, Joash, and said, "To give us your son, we want to kill him because of what he has done." And Joash, in my own words, saying that, "If this, why can't this God defend himself? If he is such a God, why didn't he defend himself? And he takes for the side of Gideon, and the people leave. And so then Gideon calls out, sends out messengers, and I'm skipping over details, but he sends out messengers to get help to defeat these Midianites. And as the Midianites, or as the people were coming, I believe Gideon had some doubts. And that's when he put out the fleece. He wanted to know for sure if this, Lord, this is what you want me to do. And we all know the story of the fleece and how he put it out the first time and the Lord made it wet and kept the ground dry. And then the next night he made the ground wet and kept the fleece dry. And then all these people gathered together, and it seems probable that the Midianites and the Amalekites were gathering in the Jezreel Valley at this time. Beautiful valley. If you would pull up Jezreel Valley on the internet, you'd see just a beautiful, lush, green valley. And because of the futility, or not, that ain't the right word, but because of the way that land produced food, it was often thought that whoever had the control of the Jezreel Valley controlled the area. They controlled the people around it. So the Midianites and the Moabites are camped in this valley as Gideon is preparing to go into battle. It says that Gideon gathers with his men at the well of Herod. And I pulled that well today is a place of tourists. A lot of tourists go to that well, and it doesn't look at all like it did when Gideon was there. But we know that God said to Gideon, you have too many men. I want you to... So he offered to the men, whoever's afraid, you're free to go. 22,000 men left and went home. Now, if I remember, I did look, and I don't have it in my notes. I think it was, George, do you know, was it 135,000 Midianites?
I don't remember.
I think it's somewhere around that. It was a tremendous amount of people. Gideon lost 22,000 men. They were already outnumbered. And for the men that were afraid that could go home, 22,000 men left. That left them with, I think it was 9,700 men. I thought this seemed like a big task to come here and preach a revival. And it was a big task. But I can't comprehend how Gideon must have felt as he was trying to follow God and his commands. And God said, I'm going to deliver these people into your hand. He gathered together. So if we do quick math, 22,000. He had 31,000 men. 22,000 of them left. And God said, you still have too many. So we know they went down to the well, and God told him, whoever gets down and laps like a dog, I want you, they are not qualified in my words. You need to let them go. The ones who drink out of their hands, they're the men I want you to go into battle with. And this is the application that I'm trying to get to for our whole message tonight. The men that got down on their, perhaps on their bellies, or they put their face to the ground, to the water, and they drank till they were full. To me, that is a picture of indulging in the pleasures of this world. They weren't focused on their mission. They were indulging in perhaps the good things. We can think about that was water was necessary. We can indulge in things that are good for us and not be focused on what God wants us to do. And when they did that, God said they're not qualified. God wanted men, in that case men, but he wants men and he wants women that are focused on the task, focused on serving him, focused on bringing him honor and glory. Those men that drank out of their hands, I would imagine they did that. Not imagine. I know they did that because they were intent on what was taking place. They were looking around. They were aware of what was going on. But the men that were drinking with their faces to the water, they were focused on indulging in self, pleasing self, satisfying self. To me, that is a tremendous challenge. And that is a challenge that I want to bring to us tonight. The Apostle Paul often refers to running a race. He tells us to lay aside the sin which so easy, the weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, to run with patience. In 1 Peter we read, "Wherefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." With those men there in 1 Peter, when he said, "Gird up your loins, the loins of your mind," he was referring to they wore a long flowing robe type garment. And when the men got serious about work or running or whatever they did, they gathered it up so it wasn't tangling them up. We need to gird up the loins of our minds. We need to get rid of those distractions and those things that are dragging us down. Perhaps it's music or movies or internet or cars or trucks or pleasure, hobbies, whatever. We need to gird up the loins of our mind and be focused as men of war. Gideon was left to defeat these Midianites with 300 men. But we know God delivered the Midianites into their hands, and we know that account. But it's interesting to me, as they battled them there, and they continued, they chased them down through the valley, and they kept going after them. Eventually, when Gideon died, the people fell again. Another challenge that we need to stay focused. We need to stay in tune with God. And just because grandpa and grandma or mom and dad lived for the Lord all their lives, if we don't stay focused, if we don't live for the Lord, if we don't, as some people would say, sell out to Jesus, our children might not follow us. And we need to do all we can in being faithful, being focused, and not indulging in this world's pleasures and in this world's perhaps good things, so that we can be qualified soldiers for Jesus Christ. That's the message and the challenge that I'm going to leave with you tonight. I'm thankful for the youth that are here. I'm thankful for those of you that are here that are doing your best at living for the Lord. Some of you have done well and are doing well. And to you, I thank you. So we challenge you and we encourage you to press on. And if you need encouragement and you need help from areas you're stumbling, from areas of weakness, talk to someone else that's older, because we've all been there. And we'd be glad to try to help you and encourage you. We're going to offer an invitation tonight to anyone who feels called. Maybe you feel like you were one of the first group that left because you were afraid. Maybe you're part of the second group because you're indulging in sin. We're going to offer the invitation to anybody tonight, if you feel the call of the Spirit, to stand and accept Him or to rededicate your life to Him. Matt, what number will we sing? 375 in the black hymnal.